Hey everyone, welcome to Superwomen. Today's guest is a dear friend of mine and founder of Top Tote, Lindsay Albanese. Lindsay started out as an incredible stylist working with people that most only dream to touch and feel and see in real life, and left her successful career as a stylist to head full on into YouTube, which then allowed her to fund her current company and bring it to much success, Top Tote, which is just one of the many inventions she has up her sleeve. Take a listen. Lindsay, I am so excited to speak to you today, not only because I love talking to you and you're one of the people I love seeing when I'm in LA or on a retreat, but I'm excited for everyone to hear your story. So welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here in that fateful day we met at that retreat 2 years ago.
If we had only known what would happen after, right?
Very true. Very true.
So just bring everyone in. We met at a Create and Cultivate retreat. We were on this big bus. I heard this loud, booming, infectious, enthusiastic voice. And I was like, who is this woman? And how do I get to know her? And that was Lindsay Albanese. So let's start with your first career.
Yeah.
You were a glamorous stylist with all of the fancy people. And I say that with knowing what you actually really dealt with. Yes. There's not much glamour in it. So will you start a little bit about what brought you into that world?
Yeah. So way back when, in 2002, I was in fashion school. Before you Googled anything, I was in fashion school and I thought I wanted to be a designer. And then when I went through design school, I was like, oh, hell no, this is a lot of math. This is a draping. I don't want to do any of this. And I heard about, you know, it's in LA. So I heard these girls were assisting these stylists. Like back then, you know, it was just such a new thing. And I right away, when someone told me that they assisted a stylist and they work with celebrities and clothes and they got to go shopping, I was like, that is what I wanted to do. And then no one knew how in the hell to help me figure out how to make that career a reality, because there was no set path. Pretty much it was like, oh, I guess you just assist and work for free forever and just hope you get a break. And I was like, really? So on I went to work for free for 3 years and wait tables and side jobs. And I got fired from all three of my waitressing jobs, because anytime a styling gig would come up, I would call my waitressing job and be like, oh, my grandma needs me to take her to the airport, or, oh, my dog's sick. I every single excuse in the book, because I was just so focused on seizing every opportunity. So when one day I got the career that changed my life.
So you worked for free. Can we talk about how that actually went down in real life and why the industry didn't pay you any money?
Yeah. Can we talk about how illegal that is now that I'm a business owner and what a liability that is? I would never do that.
Yes.
Yes. It's sadly, and it's unbelievably just how the industry works. It's such a tight-knit niche, wild, wild west, like unregulated career. There is no like paid internships. If you want to work with the stylists that are doing all the jobs, and remember, this is a tiny career, right? So it's like a neighborhood of people doing it. It's not even an industry. So in order to work with the biggest stylists, fashion stylists, you just had to offer up your services for free. And the crazy part about it is it's still like that to this day. I mean, you will intern, which the reality is, the definition of being an intern is you have to be in school and you can only work 10 hours a week. But when you're interning as a stylist, I mean, you are busting your ass. Like it is literally the boot camp of your life. It's intense. You're running around everywhere. You're exhausted. Stylists are usually stressed. And so, yeah, it's just what I had to do. Unfortunately, I didn't have any other choice. And it is still like that to this day.
You know, I go back and forth. Not that I never want to pay people, but I think in internship, when it's a short period of time, or at least for us, when you're getting college credit, that 3 months can be so pivotal. Yes. But I think that, like you, like I agree, 3 years of working for nothing just for the hope of this stylist picking you is insane. So you waitressed, you got fired a lot.
3 restaurants, I got fired. And this is the thing, when I say, you know, 3 years of working for free, you know, a lot of people say they're stylists. So when you don't know anything about the industry, you just jump, oh, I'll work for this stylist. Oh, I'll do this. So it was a lot of jumping around, hoping someone was legitimate and they were going to bring me on full time, or, you know, I would meet somebody who then would give me a full time gig. And that's also the thing with being a fashion stylist in the entertainment business. It's unless you're on a show, it's a lot of freelance work. So, you know, you work a bunch of commercials and then you're off for a month or so. So it's very inconsistent. So for me, having no experience, I had to keep my side jobs up because I had no experience and I was at the mercy of all these other stylists wanting to call me or not.
Yeah. I was a stylist. That's how I paid the bills to keep my clothing brand alive before I launched the bag. So I know the inconsistency of it. I was like bartending, styling, rubbing sticks together to make it happen. So how long were you a stylist, and what was the best part and the worst part?
I styled, so in 2004, I got the job that changed my career. I was hired on at Entertainment Tonight to style the hosts. Now, this is 2004, so Entertainment Tonight was the biggest. There was not even social media. It was the biggest show on television. So it was a massive opportunity. So from 2004 to, I would say, 2000, I don't know, 7 years ago, whatever, I can't do math, I was a stylist. So about, 12, 15 years. And the reason why I retired, and I say I retired because I did the damn thing. I traveled the world. I was a stylist at American Idol, Dancing with the Stars. I did Pantene commercials and shows and, you know, styled everyone from Jimmy Kimmel to Sarah Hyland and everyone in between. The best thing was, oh my gosh, I mean, I have been in the room with literally in the room, like at dinners with everyone from like Brad Pitt to Angelina Jolie. I've been on the red carpet of every single entertainment, the biggest award shows in the world, from the Emmys to the Grammys to the Academy Awards. So that was incredible. I've been to the Cannes Film Festival and at dinner sitting with celebrities, you know, and when you're just the stylist, really, sounds crazy, but when you're just the service person to the host, because that's what it is, you're providing a service, you're the worker bee, and you're in the room with these people, it's like, wow, this was the perk that I wanted when I said I wanted to be a stylist. I'm doing it, you know? So that was incredible. The worst part was dealing with the personalities, not only of the celebrities, but the intense pressure of dealing with the executives. There was a lot of abuse of power in the entertainment business. There was a lot of there was a lot of intimidation, a lot of manipulation from not only executives, but celebrity stylists. Celebrities. I have been held hostage in celebrities' homes because they're having a mental breakdown at 1 a.m. and they won't let me leave. I have been humiliated in front of people. I have been demeaned. I have been yelled at on set to run by a host. I've really been humiliated and broken down to bits. And my character has been questioned when all I was doing was trying to help because maybe my celebrity had a bad day. And after years of that, it wears on you. And I think that you get to a point where you know that you've earned your right to be there and you have experience under your belt, and you get to a point, you're like, I'm not dealing with this shit anymore. Like, you know, and that's the beauty of having experience, right? Is that in the beginning, you'll take all the punches, because you just want to make your dream happen. But while you're making your dream happen, you gain more confidence to really stand up for yourself. And I just, you know, there was a time where I was like, nope, not dealing with this shit. And you know what? I don't want to deal with styling celebrities when I'm 60 years old. So I'm going to venture off and pivot into the next chapter of my life. And so that's what I did.
So like you, I know what that abuse feels like. Mm-hmm. I wish I'll share a brief anecdote. A friend of mine, I left the styling world. A friend of mine said, please come back and assist me. I'll get your bags on this celebrity. And I said, I'm only doing this to help you and to get this bag on my celebrity. She said, yep, totally. And the first day I arrived, the stylist was sick. She sent me out to get medicine for her. And the celebrity's personal assistant was like, where are you going? You work for us. Don't you dare leave without us giving you permission. And then it was a week of like mental abuse and or, hey, these 7 bags, carry them by yourself. They're like the weight of a human. Try and get through a crowd that's trying to touch the celebrity. Then set everything up so she can pick one outfit, then pack it all up. And book your own flight, coach, check all the luggage. We fly the private jet, you know, unpack, like it was just, and I was like, this is why I quit. Because this is horrific treatment for one person to deal with no thank you. And guess what? She never wore the fucking bag. So that was like a lesson learned on my end. But did you, when you left, were you like, bye Felicia? Or were there parts of you that said, man, I'm going to miss some aspect of this. And am I doing the right thing?
You know, my departure, my retirement, actually, as I like to call it, was gradual. So it wasn't just like one day I quit. That's definitely not how I do things. My whole life has been transitional. And I've always manipulated certain parts of my career to help me make the next step, which I think is really important. Or not manipulated, but use the resources from one career to get to jump to the next, to pivot to the next. So no, you know, honestly, I'll tell the story. Back when I was, I don't know, like 8 years ago, I started a YouTube channel because I heard about all these bloggers making all this money. I was like, what the hell? Like for me to make, you know, $1,000, I have to like blood, sweat, and tears be yelled at, run across town 30 times, you know, being a stylist. So I started my YouTube channel and that started gaining traction. Then I started gaining followers and brand deals. So I was styling while I started my YouTube channel. And once my YouTube channel started growing, I felt comfortable to take the leap. And it was after my last big show was I was the stylist for Kathy Griffin on her talk show on Bravo for 2 years. She had this talk show. And I just knew I'm going out with a bang. This is a big production. My YouTube channel's doing well. And the day we wrapped that shoot, I knew I was never going back. And I just dove head first into YouTube, which as I shared for it had now been a year and a half that I'd been growing that while simultaneously styling. So it felt like it was stable enough to jump ship and go full time YouTube.
So when you launched into YouTube, you already had enough of, let's just say, a base of ad revenue coming in that you're like, all right, I'm not going to be destitute if I leave the industry.
Yeah, not ad revenue, more brand partnerships. That's where the bread and butter, the real money is, where you can make, you know, back then, truly, I was making $30,000 for a YouTube video. Can I say fuck on this?
Yes, girl, say it.
Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, $30,000 for a 5-minute video. I couldn't believe that. I was like, to make 30 grand as a stylist, I'm literally like not sleeping. Like it's a 16-hour days. It's the demands of not only the production, but the celebrities. It's 30 changes. It's, you know, it's stress. It's, you know, so this was just like, this was the holy grail, you know? So that brand partnerships, but also remember, so since I was a stylist, television, I had credibility. So shows would reach out to me to host segments. So simultaneously while I had YouTube, I was also, you know, being hired to do segments on the Today Show, on E! News. Brands would hire me to be a spokesperson in the media. So I was also making money doing those style expert roles simultaneously with. To be honest, it was really the moment that I was dictating my own career because prior to that, you know, and it was great, don't get me wrong, but prior to that, anybody who told me to jump, I would say how high, and I was happy to. But this was where I really kind of came into my own and became, I was the star of my career, you know? So it shifted.
So what was one of the lowest points in your career? And where do you feel like you met your biggest failure?
I was fired when I was 29 years old from one of the biggest networks in the world. Like the whole deal, escorted, taken into legal, escorted off of the property. I was humiliated, devastated. I thought my reputation was over. I thought I would never come back from this. I felt robbed. I felt like everything I worked hard for was just taken from me. And I was just at my lowest low of who I thought, everything I thought was honest and good. I didn't believe in anymore just because I was just so wronged. So I think that moment is where I started to really think about what I wanted to do with this next chapter. And I knew I still wanted to style, but I knew that I wanted to, because of that firing, I wanted to dictate my next move so that I was in the position of power and I wasn't at the mercy of a lot of other people.
Yep. I think it's those moments where you're faced with that you, it's enough to wake you up and say, that's it, I'm done, no more.
Yes, because what you realize is, and it's a hard lesson, and I think it was a lesson that, oh my gosh, I bits of that flash in my mind, you know, every week to make me a better leader. That really showed me the reality of how dirty and wrong that business can get. And that even when you have friends, like it's, you think people are your friends, you think clients are your friends, coworkers, but when shit goes down, it's every person for themselves. Everyone is just thinking about themselves. So, you know, it was just eye-opening, and I truly believe it helped, you know, it reset and made me see things very clearly. It also made me a smarter business person because I saw how wrong things could go. And yeah, ultimately it was one of the best things that ever happened to me because it could make me better. And it fueled me to fight like hell, to take back my power and make something of myself despite what happened to me.
Well, that comes through. The minute I met you, I was like, not only your enthusiasm, but I can tell you have that fight, that grit, that like nothing is going to stop you.
Mm-hmm. It's the only way.
It's the only way. I know. I always tell people, I'm like, the calorie's not coming for you.
Nope. No one
if
is.
If you want something, you better go get it. The Well and Good podcast is your guide to finding the wellness that fits your unique frequency. While this podcast is new, Well and Good has been around for over 10 years, championing their belief that wellness and health should be attainable for all. Your well-being is a birthright. Wellness is how you get there. Tune in and subscribe for new episodes of the Well and Good podcast each Wednesday, wherever you get your podcasts. You started really focusing on your YouTube channel, you built partnerships and then you're like, okay, I'm bored. I want to start a company.
Yeah.
Tell me all about that.
Yeah. So I started making all this money, like hundreds of thousands of dollars, like talking about, you know, brands like Neutrogena, Nordstrom, Saks, like, I don't know, freaking panty liners, Rogaine. Like I did it all because my God, they're just throwing all this money at you. You're like, I'm going to figure out how to make this work. And then I realized that career of being just an influencer was not sustainable because how many products can I talk about every year? Truly, it's not sustainable. You know, how many eye creams can I talk about in 1 year? How many anti-aging systems can I talk about in 1 year or sales? I needed something with more depth. I needed to connect to a purpose that was beyond products and just selling things. And I knew in order to do that, I had to tap into what I really wanted with my career and what makes me happiest. And that is connecting with people, servicing people. So, you know, offering them a service that makes them happy, that makes their life easier. And I also know that, you know, creating a brand or launching a product or a service in the world that's my own is a way to truly make money in my sleep without having to turn on the camera, put on my makeup and talk to the, you know, and talk to the camera really.
So what was that next spark?
Yeah.
That you were like, all right, here's what I've been playing around with in my head. And now I'm going to leverage, I'm making hundreds of thousands of dollars. I'm successful. You can live a cushy life. Mm-hmm. Let me be a startup. Mm-hmm. Let me go back to doing it all, but at least it's for yourself. Cause a lot of people think that they want to be entrepreneurs and then they get there and they're like, oh, I didn't know it was going to be like this.
Yeah. Oh, it's like that times a million. Yeah. So I think everything I've ever done, it's from a calling within. It's like something in my gut that will not hush and will not go away. And even when I push it to the side, it's always there. And I think that if anybody out there is listening, feels that, that is your North Star. You got to listen to that, because that, I believe, I'm very spiritual. That is something telling you, this is the way to go. This is the way to go. You know, so I would have this idea for this hat holder, and I was styling. So I was like, oh gosh, no, I have this idea for this hat holder, but my gosh, I'm not going to go into development of the product. Like, no, I pushed it aside, but it started, kept coming back and stronger. And I realized, like, Lindsay, you have to give this a shot, because this thought is not fleeting. It keeps coming back. And I urge everyone listening to, it's okay to push it back. You know, we're scared and whatever, but if it keeps coming back, like, you know, that is the way that you're supposed to go. So I was like, all right, well, then I just decided to, you know, do some research, tap into all my resources. I think one of the secrets to my success is I've never been nervous to ask anybody anything. I've never been nervous to call. God, I've called a neighbor that my parents' neighbor I haven't seen since I was 10 years old because I heard he was in manufacturing. Like, you really can't be shy. There's so many free resources out there, and it's just people, and people love to talk about themselves and their experience. So when I decided to delve into this, I first called and tapped into my resources, and I did some discovery and research, and I just had a lot of conversations. And then from there, then little by little, I started, you know, making moves to go into production with patenting Top Tote, which is the hat holder that I invented, and launching this business. But first order of business was talking to absolutely everyone I knew remotely, mom's friends, mom's friend, grandma's friends, whoever was in the business and creating products. I just had conversations with to help me figure out what my move was to launch this business.
And once you had all of that, did you say, okay, I'm going to stop doing YouTube, I'm going to dive head first? Or did you approach it like you did leaving styling? I'm going to keep on the teat of this YouTube and this good money while I fund my business.
So to this day, I upload to YouTube. I never gave it up, which is okay. Wild. I just can't do it. Like, so while I was launching this business, I was still doing YouTube because, as you know, Rebecca, you need a side hustle when you are launching a company. I have no trust fund. I had no family money, like nothing, no investors. I just had a healthy savings account, you know, and that healthy savings account was going into this company. So my safety net was dwindling. So I still needed to work and make some money on the side. So I was still doing these brand partnerships simultaneously while launching a business. So pretty much I was like 18 hours a day. It was brutal, but then it was also great because I was, you know, moving forward in something that I felt a calling to do.
And then you said Top Tote. Yeah. I have this idea. I need to follow that voice. Yeah. And YouTube is going to be the place that funds this idea.
Correct. All the money that I had made from YouTube, I had had in my savings account. And I was like, you know what? And I told my husband, I'm like, we're doing this. This shit is expensive. I mean, the patent alone was like over 20 grand. And I looked at my husband and he was like, babe, we're going for broke. I'm like, going for broke? He's like, yeah, we got it. You got to be all in and shit. He's like, you know how to be all in. I'm like, I know, but this is just a lot of money. But inside, I just knew it, you know? I knew it. And so, yeah, we launched my brand, which is my namesake brand, less than 3 years ago. And we have since, you know, selling at Nordstrom, we're launching in Saks, you know, we are multi-millions in sales. It's been incredible. So that little calling was right. I just needed to be able to get the courage enough to believe in that and also believe that nothing was guaranteed. Like, I knew I was spending money on a dream and what I thought was going to work, but I had to be comfortable with knowing that this money could just, you know, I could lose it and it wouldn't work. But you know what? I think if you had that feeling like, I don't give a shit. I'm going to make this work no matter what. I think it will. I don't know. I just believe in that. Like, yeah, you just got to keep pushing through and pivoting and being open to other, what happens during the process to see if you need to shift your mindset or whatnot to make it happen or shift your approach.
Yeah. I think that, you know, whenever I'm being interviewed, people are trying to get that one thing that'll be like, well, how could I how could I glean that knowledge? And then it would make me successful. And mm-hmm. sometimes I'm like, you can come to the table like you and I do, where we have that grit and that fight and that pursuit, and we're like a dog on a bone.
Yes.
And people who have that hesitancy have to figure out how to get over it and be a dog on a bone and know that, like, okay, losing money sucks. If you're a provider, there's obviously a lot more to lose. But if you are ready to dive into your passion and your career, fucking do it, because you'll go make money, even if you have to put your tail between your legs and go work for someone again, you know?
That's the reality. Like, I tell people all the time, and my husband and I truly believe it, we always say, we're hard-ass workers, we'll always make money, because nothing's above me. Like, I have that mindset that nothing's above me, nothing's beneath me. What am I trying
nothing's
to say?
Beneath you.
Nothing's beneath me. I'm a hard ass worker. I will always make money. Whatever it takes, I will do it. You know, if I had to go assist styling or if I had to go waitress again, like, it's so true. And when you believe that, like, I'm a hard ass worker, I will always make money no matter what, like, believe in that. Like, I think that's empowering in and of itself. If this doesn't work, I'll figure out a way to make money because I'm a hard ass worker and I'm an asset.
So you are how many years into Top Tote? What is the best and the worst part of owning your own company?
So yeah, we launched the brand, you know, with Top Tote, the hat holder, but the philosophy behind the brand is I want to create products that make people's lives easier and have a function so great that it creates conversation and gets you sharing. So we have since launched other products, and the best part is creating products that provide convenience and make people's lives easier. And that is really what I want to, that's what I love to do. I love to be like, oh, this pocket here. Oh, you know, this is the issue that I deal with. Let's make this product around this issue. And that is so fun to me, because no one is telling me what to do. It's all on me, and it's all what I'm inspired by. So that is great. That is truly the greatest joy to me, is providing service through the products that I design and solving problems for people. The worst part? Okay, so I've had a lot of lives within this fashion accessories world. And I realized I love the fact that I love the creative aspect and the creation part, and the business side and the managing people is not what I like. I'm a people person, but people person as in let's converse, let's create, let's collaborate, let's brainstorm, but not the people person as being like the boss person to overseeing a team. But the reality is, when you grow a business, your team grows and you grow into more of a managerial role. So now I'm the CEO of this company, and a lot of my time is spent CEOing, which is overseeing what everyone's doing, managing, making sure everyone's on top of their shit. So that is not my joy. I just want to create videos and products and design. So honestly, Rebecca, it's really the hardest part for me, and it's the scariest part for me in growth. Because I know it's essential, like, you grow your team, and I'm the CEO. Like, this is part of it. It's part of the success of it. But that's not the part that I want to do. I know that sounds terrible, but it's just the reality of it. As you know, you can't just be the creative design type. The company's not going to fucking go anywhere. They need a strong business person at the top, and that's me. And a lot of times my time is just emailing and overseeing and tell people what to do, or you didn't do that. And I hate that part.
So how do you stay creative? How does it not suck the creativity right out of you?
It does. And that is every single day I like have a little bit of stress about that because I want to be more creative, but my day was just spent with Zoom calls and just trying to keep up with overseeing all the moving parts of this company. That's the hardest part. And I do not want to give that up. So I'm in a bit of a crossroads right now of like, do I hire a COO to take some of this off me? Because I have to be creative to be happy. I cannot be that designer who's just in the design room designing all day. I have to be connecting with people too and creating content beyond just like me alone, like designing or me just designing with a small team. I need that variety or else I get bored. As you can see, I went from stylist to style expert to YouTube to this. I don't want to get sick of this.
I think for me, the solution was once I knew I hated something, as soon as we could hire or not only hated, but wasn't good at something, I was like, who can do better? And how do I hire for that as my next step? And obviously, as your company grows, you get there.
Exactly. Because you know, right now, those people that you need in these executive spots, they're so expensive. And that's, we've had so much growth, like that's the person that we need right now. So it's just a transitional phase. I have to stick it out. This is what I got to do right now, Lindsay. Like you don't have the money to bring on someone to pay them, you know, part-time $100,000 because that's what it is for these consultants.
Yes.
Part-time.
I know.
So this
it's
is just
crazy.
Part of the journey. And I'm glad to have it because I am just grateful that this idea and this concept and this brand is working. And I just, I'm just so grateful. And I say it every day. I still peek at my sales and I'll see like Sally bought for me and I'll be like, thank you, Sally. Like I'll thank the people when I see the sales come in. Like I seriously do that every week. I'll be like, oh, Erica, you're the best. Like I just say it to myself.
I love it. I know one other person that gets their sales texted to their phone every day. And I just love that to be able to stay that connected and that close, I think is so important in any aspect of business.
Yes, for sure.
So what is a piece of advice that you think you either learned and you want to pass on or someone gave you and you're like, this actually was a good one. This is a keeper.
Oh, God, this sounds so simple, but I feel that my support system, my whole career has just, my family, my parents were just like, Lindsay, go. Like, just, you'll figure it out. Go. Stop thinking of the worst. Just do it. You know, I think so many people think themselves out of things. Someone giving me the okay to go for it, I think is just so important for you to have those people around you who believe in you. It's everything. Because if you have people around you who are always thinking are fear-based, you know, it's going to hold you back. So having that freedom, really knowing before you start anything what you are terrible at and figuring out how you can take that off your plate or figure out how you can find a resource to help you with that should be number one. Because it's easy to do the things that you love to do and you feel creative, inspired, but there's inevitably going to be elements in that journey that are equally as important to your success. And you need to know that so you can figure out how to make that part just as strong. So maybe it's your financials. Like for me, I hired a financial advisor and a bookkeeper right when I launched my business because brands go under because of financial, not having financial clarity.
Yeah, I love it. Okay. And then what is one thing we'd be surprised to know about you? It can be quirky, a weird habit, something you like to do, maybe that you are an insanely popular TikToker now. What would we be surprised to know?
I would say that people are most surprised to learn that I was a D and F student my entire life, like from first grade to senior year. I would always D's, F's, struggling. And people would be surprised to learn that the end of my sophomore year, I was pulled in the principal's office and they said that you have only gone to class 30 days in an entire semester and you are a liability to this school and we're going to have to ask you to leave. And I was kicked out of high school.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So, you know, it's crazy. I asked my mom, like, Mom, how was that day? She goes, honestly, Lindsay, I don't remember. I think I blacked out.
Oh my God.
But I feel successful just having figured out my way and coming out of that, because at that point, my trajectory was not looking good. My career was not looking good.
No, you would never put that human together with the human you are today and be like, oh yeah, I could see that connecting.
No, I mean, I was arrested many times as a kid. As a teenager, arrested. My parents had to pick me up from the police station so many times. It's just, as my mom calls, it's a modern day Cinderella story. That's what she says.
Wow. And you have a good relationship with your parents?
Yes. Yes. Very much so. They are, if it wasn't for them, I don't think I would be where I'm at today, because I was really going down a path of destruction. And my mom always said, and I think that's always why they would tell me to go for it when I get these random creative ideas as I got older, because they knew if I could just channel that rebellious energy into something that I loved and gave me purpose, that I would do really well. So it's because of them that I am truly who I am today, because if it wasn't, if I had other parents, I would probably be, God, I don't even know if I would be here, to be honest, with the road that I was going down. Yeah.
Well, your parents seem like they stood by you so beautifully. So
yes,
absolutely. Props to the mom and dad.
Yes, for sure.
So where can people follow you, support you, and buy Top Tote?
Yeah. So you can buy my products at lindsayalbanese.com, and you can follow me on Instagram. I'm on Instagram-ish at lindsayalbanese. And then I'm also a TikToker, which is just one of my joys now, because it's just so fun and spontaneous. I'm on TikTok at by Lindsay Albanese.
Awesome. It was so good to hear your voice. It was so good to catch up, and thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you so much. And I have to say, Rebecca, your book really inspired me. Like I said, I finished it, and there were definitely I just felt like your little nuggets of encouragement and advice were so relatable when you shared, if you're trying something and it's not working and something else is, lean into that thing that's not working.
Oh, good. That makes me happy. I just wanted to thank you guys for listening to today's episode. I also want to ask you to rate and review the show wherever you listen to podcasts. I know it's a pain in the butt, but it actually helps with search and algorithms. So if you love this podcast, it is an easy way to get it more visible and out there. I also want you to follow me on Instagram at Rebecca Minkoff, at RM Superwomen, and be sure to check out my book, Fearless, The New Rules for Unlocking Creativity, Courage, and Success. Thank you again, and you will hear from me next week.